Nick DeGiglio show continues here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here on a Wednesday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. And there we go. One of our regular guests that stops on the show usually about once a month is Ian Schur, editor-at-large at CNET.com. And he's our tech guy. We love to talk tech with him. CNET.com is a great website that keeps you posted on everything that's happening in the world of tech. And he's the editor-at-large there. And you can follow him on Twitter at Ian Schur. That's S-H-E-R-R. And we welcome Ian. Hi, how you doing, Ian?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
All right. Listen, first of all, I think we have to congratulate you. You're a new father.
Yes, I have a beautiful daughter. I'm actually spending some time on leave, spending time with her, although, of course, I'm keeping up with all the tech and everything. But
yeah.
It's been really great getting to spend some time with her.
Well, congratulations, and thank you for actually taking the time to do the show. I would imagine being a new father is a busy, crazy time.
It can be, yes, but this is the magical hour where she's down for her first sleep of the evening before she wakes up to feed, so we're in a good spot right now.
Well, great. Congratulations to you and your wife. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, let's get into tech. Tell everybody about CNET.com.
So CNET is the world's largest tech news site. We obviously do a ton of news around policy, around what the companies are doing, about what the latest tech is, and then we also review it, right, which is probably the best part about it all, is we tell you whether or not it's good in your life and whether it's going to help you. And that's one of the things I think that really makes us special, is that we're not just looking at tech for tech's sake. There's plenty of people who do that. We really try and figure out, is this going to help your life be better? Is this stuff going to make things worse? And why? And I think those are really key things that are very important these days.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the website is great. It's very helpful, very informative, and fun to read. CNET.com, everybody should check it out. Oh, well, let's get to some of the tech news. Now, obviously, there's the big story out of Iowa. The Iowa caucus is all kind of blamed on an app. Like, so there was a complete debacle in the Iowa caucus. Tell us about it and what happened and what went wrong.
Yeah, I think debacle is a kind word. Supposedly, so what had happened was that this app had coding issues. So the Democratic Party in Iowa runs the caucuses there. It's not run by the state, which is unusual across the country, but specifically that's how Iowa works. And what they do is that, you know, it's not like normal voting tabulations, right? You actually have people in a gymnasium or in a room or whatever, and they are actually choosing sides and real time. And that information is then sent up to the Democratic Party, which then releases the results. Well, they thought by creating an app, as most people think, it'll make it better. But it turns out that the Democrats just can't get it right. And what ended up happening was that even though they promised that after many journalists asked them, hey, are you sure this is the first time you've used this app? Are you sure you've got it safe and secure and reliable? They said, we've got it. We've been testing it. We know it works. And then it failed. To their credit, they say it's not a hack that it happened. That's something we always worry about with the Democrats after 2016's email hack. They say it was not hacked. It was mostly just kind of a rough patch. Think of it as, you know, launching the app, and it had a few too many bugs. But, you know, we got the information about the Iowa caucuses about 24 hours later, and here we are. But it's still a real black eye for them after trying to act like they are ahead of the times, and they are catching up to what is a very strong lead among Republicans when it comes to understanding technology. The Democrats really seem to be struggling.
Yeah, it was just so crazy. Where did the app come from? Who made it?
Yeah, so it was made by this company called Shadow Inc., which if I were building an app and for a company that was involved in politics, I don't know if I would choose that name. But regardless, it was built by this company that is supposedly a bunch of former Obama and Clinton staffers who see that the Democratic Party looks like it's behind on technology, and they wanted to prove that it could go forward and help them do that. Obviously, not the way that they wanted it to play out, although they're are trying to save face and saying that they've fixed all the issues. We'll see. But it is one of those things where, you know, the Democratic Party, I think, made a legitimate effort to kind of get up to the times, and it just did not play out well for them.
Yeah. The Democratic Party does have that reputation then, huh?
When it comes to technology, it's really interesting. You may remember that back in 2008 and 2012, President Obama was really being heralded as this the future of the party in terms of technology. He had built an app that was hugely popular. He'd gotten all these people to engage with him on Facebook and then later on Twitter. He was really successful there. And you may not remember, but one of my favorite things that happened was that they released some of their information publicly about what they learned from email marketing and everything. And the most popular email they ever sent out, the subject line was "Hey," I think it was. H-E-Y. People. So, like, Obama had figured a lot of this stuff out, but then the Trump campaign just went so far ahead and was so much more effective, especially on Facebook. And that, by the way, is still something that people talk about, is that to this day, the Republican Party seems to really understand how to use technology to get to their voters more than the Democrats do. And that's really tough to see for them, and I think they want to make it better, but obviously they are really struggling.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, obviously you're talking about technology in the Trump administration. I mean, he uses he tweets like 150 times a day and gets a lot.
Yeah, and I think he's obviously very savvy about the internet in general, right? Whatever you may think of him, he definitely knows how to get people's attention and get them to share it, and that is very, very, very effective. And what's interesting as well is that I think a lot of people, before he was elected, kind of looked down at his campaign because it was very light on staff, and they seemed to be very disorganized. But it turns out that the people he did have really understood how the internet worked and were able to pull those levers and push those buttons just the way they needed to. And I think that that's a real lesson for anyone who wants to campaign in the future, is that they really need to understand this technology and work with it correctly.
Right.
And that's just something that other people have not been able to repeat yet.
Okay. All right. Ian, we're going to continue our conversation. Ian Schur is with us. He's editor-at-large at CNET.com, one of the best tech websites out there. And we're going to talk more tech news right here as the Nick DiGilio Show continues on 720 WGN.
Lonely feeling deep inside. Find a corner where I can hide.
And the Nick DiGilio Show continues on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here on 720 WGN. And we are going to talk. It's Wednesday. So we're going to talk about these new Cubs and Sox hats and the effect that they're having. They're really ridiculous. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. We are going to talk about 15 music careers of celebs and then talk a little bit more about some actors and actresses who you didn't know maybe had a recording career of any kind. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Ian Schur, we continue our conversation. He's editor at large at CNET.com, which is a terrific website. And we love to talk tech with Ian. And let's continue our conversation. Ian, before we jump to the next topic, we were talking about the Iowa caucus app debacle. What's next now for using apps in this kind of situation? After this whole thing, there's got to be some sort of effect that it's going to have, and what's going to be next?
Well, with any luck, it's going to scare these people into doing it the right way. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the real thing that is a constant reminder for us about government and technology is that this is not Silicon Valley. This is people's livelihoods. This is the elections. This is the center of democracy stuff. You can't put out a photo app and have it fail and then do the same thing with our elections. And I think that that's really the struggle here, is that the way that Silicon Valley works, in the sense that, you know, move fast and break things, as Facebook often used to say, is not something that's a good idea here. And we saw this, by the way, with healthcare.gov. You remember when Obamacare started? That was a disaster.
Yeah.
And we have, even today, the IRS website is up and down and up and down. It's it just doesn't make sense that the industry, or rather the government, really hasn't been able to figure out technology to be effective. But hopefully this is going to be a wake-up call for a lot of people to start really trying to invest in it and think about this stuff ahead of time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the lesson, there has to be a lesson learned. I found it amusing, though, when it was all happening, immediately everybody started talking about Russia. You know, that it was a Russian hack. Immediately, I just thought it was interesting that was where everybody went to, like, immediately when that happened.
Well, and to be fair, there's a lot of reporting out there that Russia is already engaged in efforts to undermine our election and hack specifically into some of the companies in Ukraine,
right,
and all sorts of other stuff. So we do know that there are efforts there, which is why I think a lot of people's minds go there. And also, I mean, let's be honest, they are enemy number one on the internet right now for us. So it would make sense that people would be worried about it.
Yeah. Okay. So here's a headline that's kind of interesting. Teens have figured out how to mess with Instagram's tracking algorithm. What's going on there?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. You may know that the way that you are tracked on the internet is just crazy, right? They know everything you do. They actually track where you hover. You may not even click on the link, but if you hover on it, they actually learn from what you're interested in just by that. So there's a lot of the stuff that goes on, and what has happened is that the next generation of internet users obviously are really upset about some of this stuff, and they're trying to be more savvy about it. So there's a group of teens that we spoke to over at CNET that I think is really fascinating. What they've started doing is they've started sharing dozens of Instagram accounts among them. And the reason that this is important is that those Instagram accounts, when you have multiple people posting from them, from Germany and then from Alaska and then from China or wherever else, what ends up happening is that all the tracking data that Instagram pulls gets messed up, right? And, you know, one person is interested in dogs, another person's interested in food, and it doesn't learn you enough to be able to advertise at you. And in a lot of ways, this is a political statement toward Instagram, but it's also a really fascinating example of how the next generation is trying to upend the way that the internet works today.
It's interesting because it's always young people that make these that do this stuff. You know what I mean? Because they're really honed in. A lot of the teenagers now have never been without, you know, there's a whole generation of young people who have never been without the internet, never been without this kind of technology.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things we constantly learn, and, you know, I myself as someone who grew up without the internet as well, is that I've been really fascinated by seeing how different generations respond, right? So, for example, there was the generation, if we go back half a generation now, right, the ones who are just entering the workforce, I think they're called Gen Z, those people were some of the first to really get into video on the web, right?
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was because broadband became widely popular, but now we're all streaming on the web, we're all doing YouTube, all of this type of stuff with stuff they really were on the bleeding edge of. And what's really fascinating is the next generation is all doing all sorts of different stuff in the way they interact on the web, and I'm really curious to see how that changes the dynamic of how we use the internet in the future.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see. So how are they doing this? How are they figuring out the Instagram's tracking algorithm?
Well, what they do is that they basically don't care about whether or not they have a ton of people following them, right? So I don't have, if I were one of these teens, I would not have Ian Schur's Instagram account. I would have, you know, whatever, I love puppies, right? And what would happen is I would share that with a bunch of different friends of mine, and we would all post to it. So it's no longer about me, myself, on the internet, which is something that a lot of previous generations are very wrapped up in, right? That being internet famous, having the most followers or whatever, that's not particularly at least what these teens are doing.
Yeah.
They are instead trying to get the most out of the internet while also trying to share with their friends and not be tracked by advertisers. And that's a different thing. I think a lot of people are happy to give up their privacy, or at least feel like that's a fair trade to be able to use a lot of this stuff for free. And very clearly, these teenagers are saying, no, that's not what I want to do. And they're finding ways around it. And I think that's really fascinating.
Is this like a full-on movement, Ian?
You know, it's hard to tell how many people are doing it. Obviously, the way Instagram is set up, it's actually designed to avoid that kind of stuff. So I imagine that it's not something a lot of people are doing. But the reason why this is an interesting story is that I think we're going to see more and more examples, and this may be a trend eventually, of the younger set really trying to kind of move away from the stuff we see as standard operating procedure on the internet, like tracking, like being all about me and my profile and my clout on the internet. And I'm really curious to see how this plays out, because I think a lot of people who kind of sit around and just look down at the younger generations think they're all trying to become YouTube stars. And it's very clear that, at least in this example, they're really just trying to find new ways to use the internet without being tracked the way they don't want to.
Yeah, I find that refreshing, I got to tell you, Ian.
I do, honestly.
Yeah, I really do. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN and the Nick DiGilio Show, continuing our conversation here with Ian Schur, editor-at-large, CNET.com, one of the best tech websites that you can have. I would love to see teenagers, you know, make a change. And it is, you know, like the generational thing where people just kind of have a cliche that these kids are all just like, all they want to do is, you know, get on YouTube and do all that stuff. I think it's unfair that that's the case. And I root for these kind of kids who are trying to make a change.
Yeah, and I think what's going to be interesting is that as the baby boomers kind of start to get smaller as a generation, I think that's the kindest way to put it, what's going to be really interesting is to see how the internet changes, because right now the largest generations on the internet are obviously the boomers and the millennials.
Yeah.
And I think as we start seeing the makeup of the internet change, the culture is going to change too, and that's going to be really fascinating.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, you know, the privacy issue, that's the number one issue, you know, with the internet, right, Ian? That's got to be it, right?
Well, I think a lot of people would argue that, yes, it is. But what I think is fascinating is that it's only become a hot-button issue for the general public over the last few years after Facebook had its Cambridge Analytica scandal, which we've written, of course, a ton about on CNET. And we've seen stuff like the election interference and all these things. That has kind of caused this conversation to start about how are these companies safeguarding our data? How are they taking their responsibility as stewards of our information? And I think that it's caused some people to really rethink the way they approach this stuff, but it's only recently that we've really started talking about it as a big group, right? Us, you know, over at CNET and all the tech journalists, we've been squawking about this for years, but it really took kind of, I think, a moment for everyone to realize, oh, this is really bad.
And the interesting response to the people who are in charge of this stuff, like Zuckerberg's response, was kind of fascinating to hear.
Well, I think all of them, their response has been really interesting because in a lot of ways, they're used to hearing me squawk about it, right?
Right.
They're really used to hearing me say, you know, what about the privacy, and then having to deal with me and then move on, right? And I think that in a lot of ways, they look at the stuff, and we've seen internal memos from Facebook and whatnot where they've said that they feel like this is a blip in the road, right?
They think that,
you know, over time, people are going to get over this, which I don't know if they're right about that, but I think it's really fascinating that to them, this is not as much of a moment in time as it is a political obstacle.
Yeah,
right. To me, at least, this feels like a cultural moment and really a touchstone for all of us where we start reassessing the way we look at the internet.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious to know why they think it's not going to be that big a deal.
Okay. All right. Ian Schur is with us. We continue our conversation. Ian Schur is editor-at-large at CNET.com. And more tech talk as we continue here on the Nick DiGilio Show. Yeah, the Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN on a Wednesday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We are live in the Skyline studio here till 4 a.m. At 4 a.m., we'll head over to Bradley Place to the TV side and hear the early morning news from WGN-TV. And then at 5 o'clock, Bob Surratt has your morning drive on this Wednesday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Ian Schur, editor-at-large for CNET.com. We continue our conversation with Ian. Ian, Disney Plus is a massive success. 28.5 1.6 million subscribers, and that's a massive success for a new service. And one of those 28.6 million subscribers happens to be my producer, Tom.
There you go.
Yeah. So,
well, and I'll share, I am also one of their subscribers, although, to be honest, I got it for free when I signed up for Verizon Fios. So for what it's worth, I don't know how long I'll be a subscriber after my year ends, but yeah. I'm one of them right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk about this in terms of the numbers here. I mean, this is a huge success. And they had that small little glitch the day that it launched. Then, of course, everybody made a big deal out of it, as we talked about before. But since then, it's just been a big success for Disney.
It's been huge. I mean, they were predicting 60 to 90 million subscribers after 5 years. And they're already almost halfway there.
It's amazing.
Just 3 months after starting. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
And I think what it speaks to is the draw of Disney's own empire, right? I mean, Star Wars, you've got The Simpsons, you've got Marvel, you've got all this type of stuff, and it's really been able to draw people in, not to mention The Mandalorian, which is the Star Wars TV show that's really been a hit, especially among fans, but also non-fans. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this ends up playing out. I mean, the car price is also, it's rather low compared to a lot of their competitors. It's lower than Netflix. It's lower than a number of other ones. And it's $7 a month. So I'm really curious to see what's going to end up happening over time. But it's very clear that Disney is going to be one of the power players, at least in this first iteration of this streaming wars that we are starting to enter in with HBO and, my employer CBS and all these other people having their own streaming services.
Yeah, and it's as someone who's been around and consumed a lot of television over the many years, it's really astonishing how technology has changed the way we watch TV and we consume the product.
Let me tell you, talking about younger generations, my son barely understands what an advertisement is. And I think that that's a real testament to the fact that streaming has really ruined his sense of what television is. I remember sitting there, and there are advertisements my friends and I talk about from, many, many moons ago, right? There are people who sing the Jolly Green Giant song sometimes.
Yeah.
Here we're sitting here in 2020, and there are children who are not being exposed to advertisements, I think, because of how upended all the stuff is. It's really fascinating how our culture is changing as a result of all of that.
Yeah, it's funny. A younger generation, I wonder if they cared about the Super Bowl commercials. You know what I mean?
No, I don't know. And as the generations change, I'm really curious to see. I will say that, Fox did their best. They had it this year with the 4K streaming and all that and having all the apps. And they really tried to heavily promote it. But it was interesting. The most popular thing I think came out of that Super Bowl was the halftime show really got a lot of attention.
It did.
And it's at the top of YouTube trending right now, not any of the advertisements.
Yeah. That's interesting. Well, Disney Plus, that's a success, no question about it, a massive success. Tom, are you enjoying the Disney Plus? I know you watch The Mandalorian and other things. What do you think of the product?
I'm still pretty satisfied with it, especially since there's that nice bundle you can get where it's ESPN Plus, so I can watch out of market hockey. I watch German soccer a lot.
Yeah.
And then you get your Hulu and then Disney Plus. I think it's like $12.99 a month altogether. So as of right now, it's still got a lot of worth. I'm really hoping that they fix the letterboxing for the Simpsons episodes, which has been really annoying as a Simpsons fan.
Yeah.
But I think for the average person out there, Disney Plus is an amazing deal.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Ian Schur is with us, editor-at-large at CNET.com. We continue our conversation on 720 WGN. So how about this? Stephen King has made a statement about Facebook. He's done. So what's tell us a little about that.
He's not just done. He is giving up an account where he has more than 5.5 million followers. And what it is that he is not comfortable with the flood of false information that's been allowed into local advertising. If you may not remember, Facebook in particular has made a stand about allowing politicians to basically say whatever they want in political ads versus Google and Twitter and other ones who have said that they can't lie or they're basically not accepting political ads. And I think it's real telling that Stephen King, I mean, a very popular person online, is making the stand on this stuff. You know, it'll be interesting to see whether anyone else does. Typically, when this stuff happens, even though it gets a lot of attention, ultimately, it really doesn't have that much impact, and people go to their kind of political corners over it and argue over it. But it still says something when Facebook is getting this kind of blowback this far down the line, right? And that it took Stephen King, you know, all of the drama and everything that's happened, this is where he's planting his flag.
Yeah, and he posted, I'm quitting Facebook, not comfortable with the flood of false information that's allowed in its political advertising, nor am I confident in its ability to protect its users' privacy. Follow me on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter if you like.
And speaking of which, he posted it on his Twitter.
Yeah, he did. He did. He posted that on his Twitter. But that's great. I mean, that's really quite a statement. I mean, you know, people love Stephen King, and he's been in the public eye, and people, you know, he's a very opinionated guy. He's not a guy who's afraid to say what's on his mind or how he feels in any topic, and even politics. So.
Yeah, and I, like I said, I'm really curious to see how this plays out. For what it's worth, we've seen a lot of different celebrities kind of go to their own corners over social networks. So, for example, George R.R. Martin, the guy behind Game of Thrones, very famously posts on a blog that is part of a service that most people don't use at all anymore in the United States. So there are people, when you have a real kind of affinity for someone, you're going to go and seek them out wherever they are. And I have a feeling Stephen King will not lose much out of this. What he's getting is he's getting his left jab at Zuckerberg, which I think a lot of people want to take. So yeah. I'm not surprised he took it.
Yeah, 5.6 followers. 5.6 million followers. That's really something. All right. Ian Schur, we're having a conversation with him as it continues. Editor-at-large at CNET.com. Google's parent company reveals YouTube revenue for the first time. This is a big story.
Yeah, $15 billion in ad sales from YouTube. And
why
this is important, I mean, I'd love to have those kind of problems, right? I remember when Apple was struggling to hit $20 billion, and this was just 10 years ago, and now a piece of Google is $15. It's just unbelievable. And I think part of why this is important is that YouTube is quickly becoming one of the centers of the Internet, and it already has been for quite a while. I think it's the number two most visited website in the world. But, you know, we've never really known how large it is other than its traffic. And it's notable that they only gave us the revenue, so we only know how much it made from ad sales, not whether it's actually profiting at all.
Right.
The costs of you know, all those videos is pretty high. But, you know, I think it says something that this is an enormous piece of Google. It's an enormous piece of just kind of the Internet. And I'm really curious to see what else we learn about it over time, especially as advertisers are increasingly wary of putting their ads on some of these videos where you've had neo-Nazis or you've had other stuff on YouTube where their ads have shown up next to, and they've really pulled back sometimes. In a lot of ways, Google's saying, look at how large we are. You can't ignore us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've grown so successfully. I remember the early days of YouTube. And how it's grown, and now there's, you know, the YouTube, you got YouTube TV, you got YouTube Music, you got Premium. There's 20 million people who subscribe to that stuff. It's an empire.
It is. And what I think is really fascinating is that you've got Silicon Valley company, Google, which is not a content expert, right? They're not Hollywood. They're not even close to Hollywood. They're 400 miles away from it. But they've been able to harness this kind of center of the video world in a really fascinating way. And I think what's going to be a real challenge for them in the future is, speaking of the next generation stuff, you know, you've got stuff like TikTok, and you've got stuff like how Twitter is doing live streaming. You've got Twitch for video games. All these different services that have become really popular. How YouTube is going to stay relevant is going to be a real conversation. And I'm really curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah, well, we'll keep an eye on it, as CNET always does. Ian Schur, we're having a conversation, continuing our conversation with Ian Schur, editor-at-large, CNET.com, a great tech website. You can follow him on Twitter at Ian Schur, and that's S-H-E-R-R. More tech talk. We continue here on the Nick DiGilio Show on 720 WGN.
Oh, Susie Q.
And It's the Nick DiGilio Show continuing here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on this Wednesday morning. And, yeah, we're having a conversation with Ian Schur that continues right now, editor-at-large at CNET.com. Ian, we were, you know, Google comes up a lot, obviously, in any conversation that we're having about technology. But this is a good one here because this is a scary kind of a thing. We're talking about privacy a lot as well. But Google keeps a scary amount of data on us, and you guys posted how to find it and delete it. This is an important thing. Give us some info on that.
Yeah, and we have instructions on CNET. I'm not going to go through it all. But I think what's really important is that if you go into your Google account page, which if you have a gmail.com address, you're going to have this information there, you can actually learn all the information they have on you. And it is truly amazing how much they have on you. They record, for example, all of the different all the different websites you Google for, all the different places you go when you're in Google Maps, the videos you watch on YouTube. You can actually download your entire YouTube video history, which is something New York Times did once and learned a lot about one person over the period of a few years. Uh-huh. It's just really fascinating how much data they keep on you. And of course, all of the stuff they do by default, right? So all of the stuff is being tracked about you by when you sign up for it, and you have to tell them turn it off, which you can, and we have instructions for that on CNET as well. And you can even download this information and be able to parse through it if you're really fascinated by it. Google has a system to allow you to actually download everything that you've done on Google and then take it somewhere else if you want to or delete it. So that's a really beneficial thing as well.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at the piece that you put up on CNET, and there are detailed instructions on how you can do this, and I think it's important that people should check this out, and people might be really, really surprised and concerned just about how much info they have.
Yeah, and I think what's also interesting is there's also stuff that you can learn from their ad preferences, which is another setting we have instructions for on CNET. And you can learn what they're kind of focusing ads on you for. And I think that's really fascinating because they make a lot of assumptions about you based on what you do. And by the way, Facebook does this too. We actually have instructions on CNET for you to learn what Facebook thinks your politics are and how they send ads to you. And you may be surprised by what they think you are based on the stuff you post and what you write. So these types of things, these companies are making decisions about what you see and what's shown to you based on all of this information. I think it's really important for you to know what they think you are so that they get it right, or you tell them, hey, knock it off.
Yeah, that's a very George Orwell type thing happening here.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. How do people, you know, what are some ways, just in general, that people can keep an eye on it and protect their privacy while they're online? Because everything is out there already in the ethers, but how do we protect ourselves?
Yeah, so the best way that you can protect yourself is to go through these settings and know, just be aware of what they're doing. And you can tell it to turn off some of this tracking stuff. So, for example, I have it set so that it doesn't keep track of all of the Google searches I do because I feel like that's really weird. But there's other stuff I leave on, like I leave on some of the YouTube history because sometimes I saw a video and I want to show it to a friend.
Right.
So you want to make sure that you're aware of what they're doing and then making good decisions. Another thing also is that there are settings you can do on your computer to be able to avoid them tracking you. So, for example, there are systems like the Tor network. If you've never heard of that, we have instructions on CNET. It completely anonymizes you. Or other stuff that will help you avoid some of these tracking things. And trust me, Facebook and Google do their best to track you, whether you have an account or not. But there are ways for you at least to feel like you're somewhat protected from them if you want to be.
Yeah. Wow. It's pretty scary, actually. I mean, it really is.
This is why we're starting to see regulations starting up and politicians and really starting to put pressure on these companies because there's no more choice, right? I mean, if you live on the internet, Facebook and Google know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And some people are not comfortable with that. And those people, a lot of people argue, should have a choice.
Yeah, I think they should. We're talking with Ian Schur, editor-at-large at CNET.com, about tech stuff, which we always do. Usually once a month, Ian joins us. And if you weren't with us a little bit earlier, right at the top of the interview, we mentioned that Ian has a new baby. Congratulations again, Ian.
Thank you.
And there's a news story here from CNET that you guys did. and I think this is going to be interesting. I want to hear your take on this. It's a $1,300 smart bassinet that you can get. Tell us about this story and how and what you feel about it as a new father.
Yeah, so this thing came out a couple of years ago. It's called the Snoo, S-N-O-O, and it's actually the guy behind it. His name is Harvey Karp, which for people who are Gen X and above, you may know him because he's kind of the guru of the parent scene. He had a book called The Happiest Baby on the Block, which went super-duper blockbuster, and he's since started a company to help people basically have easier times with their babies, including through this device. And what it does is that it will gently rock your child to sleep. Now, that's not what $1,300 pays for. What it also does is it has a microphone in it, several of them actually, and speakers. And what it does is that it plays different sounds that help coo your child to sleep. And if it senses that your child is starting to wake up or get upset, it will change the sounds and actually rock them at a different speed and pace. And all of this is designed to help the children sleep better based upon what his books had recommended for years. It's a really fascinating idea. There's actually, I've spoken to him a number of times about it for CNET, and he's actually talked about this thing being brought into, for example, wards for children who babies who are born addicted to drugs. You know, their parents are drug addicts, and the babies are born with that addiction, and they have the hardest time as babies, right? I mean, they're not only are they having to learn how to breathe and eat and all that stuff, but then they're also having to basically be weaned from this drug. So they're actually testing this in those hospitals to see if it can help those children. There's a lot of promise behind this thing, and yeah, it's easy to kind of make fun of $1,300. But I'll tell you that one of our editors, Roger Cheng, who's our head of news, actually got one. We've had several people use them now and have had really good experiences. And I'll actually share. I have one myself that I've also been playing with, and I've had, you know, mixed experiences. It speaks to the fact that the kids are all different. You know, Roger's kid really responded well to it. Another, Vanessa, who is one of our reviewers, kid really responded well to it. My daughter now is just starting to respond well to it. She didn't initially seem to really respond to it very well. So every kid is different, but that's what it speaks to, is this effort to kind of offer stuff that will help everybody.
And this has been around, you said, for a couple of years, this item?
Yes, it's been around for several years, and in fact, it started at that $1,300 price point, but now they even have a rental service so that you don't have to pay all $1,300. And this is a conversation about tech in general for parents, is that there's this whole effort to come out with technology for parents. There are, for example, portable breast pumps. They're really fascinating. We have a great video on CNET. I promise you it's safe for work.
Yeah.
About how one of our reporters carried one of them in, and they actually go into the bra, so people can't even see that you're pumping in the middle of an event.
Wow.
And or if you're on the subway or whatever. And there's just a lot of really interesting technology out there, but the challenge is it's all very expensive. It's not all proven yet, to my point. Harvey Karp, Dr. Karp, is trying to bring it to hospitals to prove that his thing works. But if it really shows that it can make people's lives better, why not?
Yeah. No, that's great work that he's doing. That's really interesting because, you know, as we move along, I mean, we're talking about tech here, Ian, you know, it should be allowed for parents and new parents to use this tech for easier growing, for having your kids grow up.
Well, and I remind people quite often whenever they snicker at me for having an expensive bassinet or any technology I'm using with my kid, is that, you know, surveys overwhelmingly show that new parents are miserable people. They're having a really tough time, and they are much more less happy than non-parents, even though they feel more fulfilled, which is an interesting kind of part of all that. And I think a lot of that speaks to the fact that, you know, as our families have grown further and further apart, a lot of us are further away from one another. We don't have as much help for one another. And technology is really one of those things that can step in and really help, you know, two working parent households make it work. And that's really important these days.
Yeah. And that's called the Snoo, correct?
S-N-O-O, yes.
S-N-O-O.
And, like I said, we've got a review on CNET of it, video and everything, and instructions for how to use it if you're interested. And then the smart breast pump we also have information on. We've been really trying to cover all of the stuff, because partially because we're having a baby boom at CNET, but
yeah.
also because, you know, there's kind of a baby boom starting with all the millennials starting to have kids. So.
Yeah.
That's part of what we're responding to as well.
Wow, terrific stuff. CNET.com is the website. You should check it out. Everything that we've been talking about is there. How big is the staff, by the way, at CNET?
We have over 120, I think, people, including our video team, which is just amazing at what they do. We're basically trying to cover all aspects of technology and how it impacts you. Refrigerators, dishwashers, smart doorbells, and privacy issues as well. Everything in between.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's great. You guys do a great job. CNET.com. Make sure you check it out. Ian Schur, always a pleasure. Congratulations on the new baby. And we will talk
to you very much.
And we will talk to you again.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Take care.
Ian Schur, editor at large at CNET.com. Always a great time to talk to him. It's a terrific website if you're interested in tech and you want to know about these items that are available and you want to learn about them and see if they work. It's a great website. Ian Schur, he joins us once a month. All right, it's the Nick DiGilio Show, and we continue here on 720 WGN.